Monsieur, mesdames et mes chers amis, ladies and gentlemen, this is Preston O'Quinn. Thank you for listening. And before I go into the subject matter of my program for today, I again urge and invite those of you who are kind enough to listen and who may have any comments to make about the program or who may wish to voice any likes or dislikes about it or who may have any suggestions to make, may do so by ringing me at my number. That's area code 337-363-1492. 363-1492, the same year that Columbus discovered America, 1492. So it's very easy for you to remember. Or you may drop me a line. You may drop me a line at 2719 Opelousas Road, Ville Platte, Louisiana. That is 2719 Opelousas Road, Ville Platte, Louisiana. Or you may call the radio station. You may call KVPI at 362-124. That's 363-2124. Give them the message, and they'll see to it that I receive it. And I give you my assurance that I am going to do my level best to accommodate you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, today I will tell you about a lawsuit between me and a former clerk of court and sheriff of Evangeline Parish. And I'm talking about the late Kazan Fontenot. I am sure that you old timers like me listening in, remember me. In this modern day and age, we'd say that he was a big dog, a very, very popular man, and a very, very strong politician. But before I can get into this case, it is absolutely necessary that I give you the proper background leading to it, or you will never understand its significance. It involves the Preston O'Quinn Building, which is located at the corner of Magnolia and Court Streets, and is now occupied by my son, Gilbert J. O'Quinn, by Gilbert Winky O'Quinn, my brother, and by Judge Donald Loney, my friend, all of who practice law in that building. As most of you know, the name Preston O'Quinn Building is in bold letters in front of the building at the top. Now, at one time, a long time ago, this was the Eagle Hotel. It was a wooden building. There were hotel rooms upstairs, and there was a couple of them downstairs across the hall from the restaurant. It did a thriving business in those days because there were scores of salesmen or drummers, as we called them, from out of town who stayed there overnight. Since they called on so many stores in Ville Platte and in the Ville Platte area, they could not cover them all in one day. So instead of driving home, wherever they were from, maybe Lafayette or Crowley or someplace like that, what they would do, then they would have had to return the next day. So they simply stayed overnight. They amused themselves at one or more of the watering holes over here in Ville Platte. And you know, there was many of them because then Ville Platte was wide open. Now, there are no more drummers. They have been replaced, I presume, by the computers and by the huge supermarkets and stores like Walmart's and other stores like that, Target and so on and so forth. But I will say this, they were a colorful lot. They were all nice guys, always had jokes for you, and they made you laugh. Now, enough of the drummers, and let's get back on track over here, so that you will fully understand the configuration. The restaurant is now Gilbert and Winky's waiting room and Winky's office. Gilbert's offices are across the hall, which were once hotel rooms, then later became Paul Reed's law office, and then Leon Vidrine and Adiel Lafleur's barbershop. In the back was the draft board. The draft board had two rooms, and that was behind the barbershop. The lady who worked in the draft board was Annalie Dizitel Manuel, the former tax assessor B. Dizitel's sister. Judge Loney's law offices are in the back of the building. Now, separating Winker's offices and Judge Loney's offices is the famous, or maybe the infamous, coffee shop, which is the focus of this program. You will hear much about it later on. Now, the restaurant at one time was run by Desia Oquen, one of my distant cousins. Joe Guillard of Villeplat is married to one of her daughters. She served excellent meals. I mean, it was always a pleasure to eat one of her plate lunches. Then Kazan Fontenot acquired the building. And a couple of very interesting transactions followed. Well, first of all, he completely renovated the building, and he had brick veneer constructed over the wooden building completely, changing its appearance. Then Jack Frugie bought the building from Kazan. And he kept it for a short period of time. And then sold it back to Kazan for some unknown reason. I cannot explain to you why this happened. And both of these fellows have now passed, so we will probably never know. Maybe they wouldn't tell us if both or one of them were still alive. At that time, it had become the Hotel Kazan. Now, from a protruding metal beam at the top of the building hung a huge red neon sign that read Hotel Kazan. And you could easily read that sign from Main Street. It was quite visible. And of course, the building was still being run as a hotel and a restaurant. Now, many employees from the courthouse frequented it for coffee, and they had lunch there at noon. At one time, at this time, there were not very many overnight guests staying in the rooms because of the demise of the drummers, as I've just explained to you. Now, this was in the days of the grand old courthouse, that majestic Greek-style building with the white marble columns in front. It was a sin, ladies and gentlemen, when the pride of Villeplat was torn down. A crying shame, to say the least. Now, Kazan also had another hotel, and this one was located in Mamou and was also named the Hotel Kazan. Now, incidentally, it has been recently and beautifully restored and will be a bed and breakfast. It is worth you taking a ride to Mamou to see it. Kazan was originally from Mamou and moved to Ville Platte, and at one time he was a political power in Evangeline Parish. I guess you could call him the Cousin Dud of Evangeline Parish. He loved to talk on the radio, and he soundly dressed down his opponents. He was a tall, slender, white-haired man who always dressed well and resembled an aristocratic Southern gentleman from the Old South. He had served in the Army during World War I, which had greatly improved his English. He was a self-educated man, and much to my surprise, I learned when I was a practicing lawyer from an old lawyer and Loyola graduate from Lafayette named Welton Mouton Sr., whose son Welton Jr. was a good friend of mine, and he told me that Kazan had attended law school for a while at the Loyola Law School in New Orleans. And he proved it to me by sending me a certified copy of a class list of the Loyola Law School at that time, and sure enough, Kazan's name was on it. And not many people know this, and most of you that are listening will probably be surprised at what I'm telling you, but the proof is here and is still existing by the virtue of that certified copy of the law class list, which is framed and hung on the wall of my coffee shop, which I just said is the limelight of this talk. True, he did not graduate from law school, but the point about it is that he went. This was in the 1920s, 1923, I think, and at that time, not only did you not need an undergraduate college degree to attend law school, you didn't even have to be a high school graduate. I suppose all you needed was the cash to pay the tuition. Yes, folks, times are changing. Now you need a four-year college degree and a high score on the LSAT to get in. Then Kazan got in politics. He was elected the Clerk of Court of Evangeline Parish, served a couple of three terms, and then he later ran for Sheriff of Evangeline Parish, defeating Bruce Swallow, the incumbent, whom he called Le Taureau Noir, the Black Bull, during the campaign when he made speeches on KVPR. Kazan also became quite wealthy, acquiring vast acreage of land, plus several properties in town. He was a good businessman. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I will pause for a commercial break. Y'all are all familiar with Kazan Lake and the campsites. At one time, all of that land and the lake, which still bears his name, belonged to him. He sold it to Percy Fontenot. Now, daily, you can hear on KVPR the commercials talking about the excellent fishing at Kazan Lake. They are catching sockeye, they're catching bass, they're catching perch. And there's one program where they jokingly state that you can catch a baleine. It says, tu peux attraper une baleine, which is a whale in that lake. Well, I don't know about that. I think that's a whale of a story. Well, Kazan owned the property facing on West Main Street across the dollar store, and he built that splendid red brick home surrounded by oak trees where he and his wife Louise lived until they passed. Now it belongs to the Mamou Hospital Corporation, and Dr. Fraser has his practice there. Kazan was a very good friend of my uncle Lee Oquin, who served the tri-parish area as state senator, the office now held by my cousin Eric Lafleur. Now, Kazan had been after Uncle Lee, who was my parent, and incidentally, his nickname was Brahma. He was a big guy. He wanted him to run for sheriff, but somehow that never materialized, and instead Kazan ran. Well, Kazan and Papa were also friends, but not as close as he and Lee Okwan were. He and I knew each other, but we were not close. In 1966, I embarked upon a rather foolish political adventure, and at the urging of some of my friends, took on L.O. Fusilier District Attorney, the strongest and most powerful politician in Evangeline Parish then. At this time, I will not go into the gory details of that race as it addresses itself to another radio program, but I will simply tell you that he beat the socks off of me, and it hurt too much to laugh, and I was too big to cry. In early 1967, I was still licking my wounds, but my spirits were not undaunted. I was still young and full of vim and vinegar, and I was not about to give up. So Kazan approached me, and this is the beginning of a strange relation. When my secretary announced that he wanted to see me, I had no earthly conception of what the old gentleman, statesman, and politician wanted. I thought that maybe he wanted to hire me for a case because he constantly stayed in court. I said, send him in. And then he came, tall, lanky, well-dressed in a tailor-made suit, and quite frankly, a dominant and impelling figure, really an awesome one. He looked like a governor. I shook hands with him and briefly shot the breeze, but he wasted no time to get down to business. I knew that he was in my office on a mission not to give me a case. He called me son. He said, son, you see that building that is the Hotel Kazan across the street? I said, yes, sir. I could hardly miss it. He said, that building has unlimited possibilities. It can be converted into an office building quite easily. You could have your law offices downstairs and the rest of the building upstairs to rent for other businesses. The rent that you would collect would be more than enough to pay the note. Well, he had taken me by ambush, but I knew I needed more space where I was at, and the idea of owning that big building was intriguing. It had never entered my mind until that day. I didn't know if I could afford it, but I didn't even know how much he wanted for it. The campaign hadn't broken me, but it had pretty well dented me. But he continued by saying, there are already two tenants in there, a barbershop and the draft board offices, that's where Gilbert has his offices. And he says, they will remain if you buy the building. So you'll have two good, solvent tenants to begin with. He was quite a salesman, but I still didn't know how much he wanted for the building. I also knew that I would be obligated to pay the $48 a month rental note on the office that I was now occupying for about 3 more years, because I had leased it for 10 years. So I asked him how much he wanted for that, and he told me that he'd make me an offer that I couldn't refuse. Well, this interested me and perked me up. Well, he would sell me the building for $40,000, all on credit, no money down, and he would finance it himself, letting me pay it out at $2,500 a year with 6% interest. That didn't sound too bad. So I said, well, let's go take a look at it. We did, and he took me through it, and he showed me basically where I could have my office. He gestured with his long arms, and he was very convincing. Then we went upstairs, and I saw that there were 10 rooms there that could be converted into offices. Each room had its own bathroom, and it sounded and looked promising. I figured it would take a lot of work and a lot of money to do that, but I found the idea very attractive. I asked him for a few days to think it over, and he said, okay, but don't take too long, because I will offer it to someone else and they will grab it. I'm giving you first choice, because I like you and I know your family well, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I don't know why he liked me. It turned out to be a fatal attraction. So I took that with a grain of salt, but maybe it was true. I know he didn't like the present parish officials, and he knew I was bucking them. So I guess that was one reason for liking me. So I got a couple of my buddies. I got Ray Verrett, who was a lumberyard owner and a building contractor. And I got E.J. DeVille, who recently passed, a jack of all trades and master of all, to come look at the building with me and advise me on the feasibility of turning the hotel into an office building. E.J. was, among other things, a floor coverer, and a refrigeration and air conditioning specialist, as well as one who knew and understood electricity and plumbing. Ray Verrett was and still is a very good contractor and a residential and commercial builder and a supplier of building materials. They came and checked everything out, including the possibility of converting the restaurant side of the building downstairs into a suitable law office. Well, after a pretty good inspection of the building, it was concluded that it was feasible, but would, of course, take a considerable amount of cash. Well, heck, it was only money. So one of the biggest advantages of this building was its location. In those days, it was considered very important to have your law office close to the courthouse. The idea was that it would attract clients with cases. The building, as most of you listeners know, is catty-corner across the street from the courthouse, an excellent location if ever there was one. So the three geniuses, E.J., Ray Verrett, and myself, conferred several days, I think at least once a week or more, over a supper with strong liquid appetizers which loosened the tongue. Well, after many, many discussions, finally, I made the ultimate decision, and that decision was that I would take a chance and I would roll the dice and I would buy the hotel. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I am running out of time. So in 2 weeks from now, I am going to tell you what happened after I bought that hotel and changed it into an office building, and especially what happened when we made that coffee shop. I think that you're going to find it very, very amusing. So I urge you to tune again in 2 weeks. Thank you for listening. I remind you that I do a column which is published in the Gazette every other Thursday. I invite you to read it. Monsieur, mesdames, merci beaucoup pour m'avoir écouté. Et dans 2 semaines, je vais finir cette histoire-là. Et puis, je vais vous raconter qui a eu. Après, j'ai acheté l'hôtel. Et quand j'ai fait un office de loi et des offices dedans, et surtout le coffee shop, qui a causé beaucoup, beaucoup de difficultés. Encore, merci beaucoup. On va se voir dans 2 semaines. Same time, same station. Goodbye.